Excellent, excellent, excellent. Well, good morning and welcome. For those of you who are with us for the first time, my name is Chris, and I'm the lead pastor here at Hoboken Grace, whether you're here in person or watching online. And today we are wrapping up a conversation that we've been having for about four weeks now called Drain. And we've been looking at this reality in our lives that we have almost an unparalleled ability to be able to drain from our lives all of the enjoyment from the good things that we have. We have an unbelievable ability to take the good things that we've been given, the good things that exist in our lives, and rather than being able to experience them and enjoy them, we just drain the life out of them. And we live in this interesting culture, this interesting world where we're almost constantly in a state of discontentment. Where rather than being satisfied by what we have, we're constantly looking to the next thing. In the process, we drain the life out of almost everything that we have. And we're not just talking about things here. We're not just talking about the stuff in our lives. I'm talking about the relationships in our lives. And we're constantly looking at another person's relationship or another person's marriage or another person's family. And in the process, we have this unbelievable ability to drain the life out of what we have. And we live in this constant state of discontentment. And for the past couple of weeks, we've been looking at this reality in our lives. We've been looking at how this is so much a part of our lives that for many of us, we can't even imagine what it would be like to be content. We've been looking at this reality, but then we've also been looking at a dream. We've been looking at a dream that I believe that God brings to you and to me, to every single one of us. Doesn't matter who you are, doesn't matter where you've been, that God is stepping into our lives and saying, listen, this story that you're living, it doesn't have to be your story. This story of discontentment, it doesn't have to be your story. That it could actually change, that we could experience something different. It's found in Philippians chapter 4, and Paul's talking about this in his life. And as he's on this journey with Christ, he comes to a point that is phenomenally significant. He says this in Philippians 4:11. He says, not that I was ever in need, for I have learned how to be content with whatever I have. I've learned this. My story is no longer that story of discontentment. My story is a story of contentment. And so a couple of weeks ago, we began this journey and we set out to pursue this dream that God's brought into our lives. And again, I cannot emphasize this enough. This is about so much more than just how we feel about our stuff. Because at the core of those decisions that lead us away from Christ is discontentment. Discontentment has this powerful ability to come in and erode our belief that we're loved. It has this powerful ability to be able to undermine how God is providing for us and how he's caring for us. This is about a lot more than just how we feel about our stuff. This is at the core of our ability to be able to follow him, of our ability to trust him. And so we've been looking at how do we do that? If this is possible, if this is actually possible for our story to change, if it's actually possible for us to leave behind discontentment and to experience a life and a story of contentment, what does that look like? How do I do that? We began with laying that foundation of comparison. And it's not that we stop comparing. It's not that we compare to someone who has less than us, but that we compare constantly what we have to what we deserve. And the reality is that when you look at how we've hurt those around us, when you look at how we've betrayed those around us, when you look at the ways in which we've walked away from God and the ways in which we've impacted the lives of those, even those who are closest to us, those that we love the most, the reality is that what we deserve was death, but that Christ gave his life so that we could live. and this reality of what we deserve. And we laid that foundation. And then last week, we talked about how that perspective is so fleeting. And so we need to be disciplined in certain practices to remind us of that. As a matter of fact, I want to remind you, for some of you, again, today, you need to be taking communion on a weekly basis. It's a reminder. Reminder of what? A reminder of what we deserve and what we've been given. You need to be constantly practicing that. It's a disciplined practice that God brings into our lives to keep us in this place where we're able to see things for what they really are, where we're able to enter into this conversation of contentment with the right perspective. And up until now, everything that we've talked through has really been proactive. Everything that we've talked through has been, okay, how do we transform our minds? How do we change the way that we think about this and the way that we engage the life ahead of us, the way that we engage this upcoming week, the way that we engage tomorrow? Everything has been proactive, but today I want to shift a little bit and I want to talk about the reactive side of this. Because no matter who you are, no matter how long you're on this journey, no matter how long you've practiced this, the truth is that at some point on your journey, as we're learning this and as we're moving towards this place that Paul says is possible in our lives, at some point, even though you're proactive and even though you're practicing those habits and those disciplines, and even though there's going to be a point at which all of a sudden, out of nowhere, discontentment is going to rear its ugly head. And you're on this journey and you feel like you're doing well and you're maintaining that perspective. You're remembering, okay, what I deserve and what I have. And rather than looking past what God's given you, you're able to enjoy what God's given you and you're experiencing some success in this and you're enjoying it and you're able to experience what God is calling us to in this. But then all of a sudden you get a phone call. And you pick up the phone and your friend is so excited and they're like, man, guess what? I just got engaged. And you hear them say that and you think to yourself, I should be happy for them. But there's nothing happy happening anywhere in here. There's just anger and frustration and all this discontentment and it comes out of nowhere. You don't even know where it came from, but all of a sudden it just hits you and you're like, why am I still single? And on the phone, you're thinking, you're saying all the right things. I'm so happy for you. I'd love to be in the wedding. And then you get off and the phone just goes across the room. And it just comes out of nowhere. You don't know what happened. It just shows up and all of a sudden, discontentment, it just rears its ugly head. And the truth is that as we're on this journey together, that's going to happen as we're growing and learning in this. Paul didn't arrive at this. When you look at Paul writing this, this isn't something that he wrote early in his journey. This is something he wrote late in his journey. This didn't happen overnight. It was a growth process for him. It's something that he doesn't say, I knew it. He doesn't say it was a gift that was given to me. He said, no, I learned it. It was a process. There's a process to this. And as you're in that, the truth is there's going to be times when discontentment is just going to rear its ugly head. So what do we do then? I think it's important for us to not just talk about the proactive side of this, but then to also talk about the reactive side of this. Because my fear is that as we engage this, that when discontentment rears its ugly head, that we're going to get frustrated and we're going to feel like a failure and we're going to enter into that conversation of I'm never going to be able to defeat this. This is going to continue to be my story. I'm never going to be able to move past it. And in the process, we're going to miss out on something really, really beautiful, really, really beautiful, and an opportunity that I don't think we can afford to miss. An opportunity that I don't think we can afford to miss. And so today, what I want to talk about is what do you do? What do you do when that discontentment shows up? Because I think there's more to it than just reminding yourself of the perspective. There's something really, really valuable in this. And I want to give you three questions to ask yourself. I want to give you three questions to ask yourself when discontentment begins to show up in your life. I think one of the reasons why Paul was able to learn this is because Paul was unbelievably self-aware. When you read through his writings, he's often writing about his own journey. And as he's writing about his own journey, he's talking about what he's seeing happening within himself. He's constantly paying attention to what's happening within himself. So there's one point at which he's talking about the struggle that he's in. He says, I want to do what's right, but then there's something inside of me that's pulling me in this other direction. He's constantly paying attention to what's happening within himself. Not only does he demonstrate this in his writing, about his journey, but then he also calls us to it. When he's talking in 2 Corinthians, he's talking to them about their faith, and he's talking to them. He says, examine yourself to see if your faith is genuine. Test yourself. He says, no, you need to be aware of what's happening inside yourself. You need to test yourself to figure out, okay, where am I at? You need to be self-aware. When he talks to them about taking communion, he says, you need to examine yourself. You need to be self-aware. Know what's going on inside of yourself. Know what's going on in your heart. Know what's going on with your faith. And I think that when you look at discontentment gives you an incredible opportunity to be self-aware. But unfortunately for most of us, we either give in to the feeling of discontentment, or we try to just move past it, or we try to ignore it or forget it. But if you will pay attention to it, if you will use it as an opportunity to examine yourself, it can reveal some things within you that you need to know about. And so rather than being frustrated by that discontentment that comes up, rather than feeling defeated by that discontentment that comes up, I want to challenge you to ask yourself three questions in that moment. Number one is this: is there a lie that I'm believing? Is there a lie that I'm believing? At the heart of discontentment, we often find lies. Lies that we've bought into. There's a passage in Ephesians chapter 4 where Paul is instructing them in how to relate to one another, and he says, therefore each of you must put off falsehood and speak truthfully to his neighbor, for we are all members of one body. Sometimes people will talk about this passage as, okay, you need to make sure that you're not lying to each other. And that's part of it, but he uses the word that he uses on purpose because it's bigger than just, okay, I told you a lie. It's talking about communicating truth to one another, not just about the current situation, but in what we believe about the world around us. And he says, no, you need to make sure that you're identifying the lies in each other's lives and that you're speaking truth into those things. You need to get rid of those lies in your life. And one of the things that discontentment gives you the opportunity to do that's really, really powerful is that it gives you the opportunity to identify lies in your life. And sometimes they can be really big lies, and sometimes they can be really small lies, but all of them are significant lies. As I was thinking about this, I was thinking about one of the more intense moments of confronting small, ridiculous lies in the life of me and my wife, Anna. I remember very clearly when we were just about to have our first child, Caden. I remember very clearly when we went to register for Caden. Now, I don't know how many of you have ever registered for a child, but if you haven't yet, okay, just plan for a really big fight, okay? If you've ever registered for a marriage, you probably know this already, right? It's just going to be it's crazy. So, anyway. But I remember going into it, and we had such crazy different ideas of what was needed and what our needs were for this child. And it didn't help, Anna, that I had recently watched a documentary called Babies. I don't know how many of you have ever seen it. It's a really cool documentary because they follow these babies who grew up in like four different, very different places. So one of them grows up in Manhattan and has like a full-time nurse. I think has like two nannies on call. It basically lives in a protected bubble where nothing can ever get to it. and has everything that you could possibly imagine, every gadget, every toy, everything. And then the other one is a baby who grew up on a dirt floor in an African hut. And the mom would just leave the baby for hours on the dirt floor because they have to do things in order to be able to survive, in order to be able to live. And you're watching these two babies grow up. And I walked into that registration or that registering experience with that. And so I kept saying, like, the baby in Africa didn't need that. Which my wife, surprisingly, did not appreciate. But there are all these lies that come in, and sometimes they're small about the things that we need, and do I really need that or do I not need that? And sometimes they're very small, sometimes they're very big. One of the things, one of the really interesting things that can happen on our spiritual journey with Christ is that discontentment can actually begin to work its way into how we feel about our relationship with Christ. And so we'll begin to say to ourselves, why am I not growing the way they're growing? Why don't I experience God the way they experience God? Why didn't God do for me or interact with me the way that he did with them? And we can begin to believe the lie. We can begin to believe the lie that God's love is based on our spiritual maturity. We can begin to believe that God loves someone more because they know more about him, or we can begin to believe that we're loved less because it just doesn't seem like God interacts with us the same way that he interacts with them. And all of a sudden, this discontentment begins to show up. You can ignore that discontentment, you can move past that discontentment, or you can use that discontentment to increase your self-awareness. It can be a window into what's happening in your heart. Rather than just pushing it down, rather than just moving past it, rather than just ignoring it, to take a second and say to yourself, okay, well, what's happening here? Why do I feel this way? Is there a lie that I'm believing here? Is there some kind of lie that I'm believing here about what I need? And even with those small lies, I know we laugh at them, and we've been making jokes about the things that marketing tells us that we need all throughout this series. But the truth is, the small lies can be really powerful too. Because all of a sudden, you begin to believe that God hasn't given you what you need. And it does. It erodes your confidence in the fact that you're loved. Pay attention to discontentment, whether it's big or small. Pay attention to it. Because it gives you the opportunity to do what Paul calls us to do, to examine ourselves. Okay, what's happening in me? Is there a lie here that I'm believing? Another thing that discontentment reveals in our lives, and probably more than anything else, discontentment reveals this, is this. And this is the second question you need to ask. Is there an idol that I've created? Is there an idol that I've created? Is there something in my life that rather than trusting God to satisfy me, rather than trusting God to love me, rather than trusting God to provide for me, is there something else that I'm looking to do that for me? That I'm looking to be that in my life? Is there an idol that I've created? Am I passionate about this relationship, not just so that I can love someone well, but am I passionate about this relationship because I believe that if I had a good relationship, I would finally be satisfied? Am I passionate about my marriage because I really want to be able to love my wife or my husband well, or am I passionate about it because I think that a good marriage would actually satisfy me? Pay attention to your discontentment. Oftentimes I see this happen as far as career. People are discontent about what's happening at work, and you begin to dig down into it, and you see that there's an idol of success. There's that thought that, man, if I could just get a couple steps further up that ladder, I'd finally be happy. I'd finally be satisfied. I'd finally feel valued. I'd be respected. And is there an idol that you've created? Discontentment has an amazing ability to be able to reveal that in our lives. And one of the things that Jesus wants to do in your life is that he wants to engage those idols with you. In John chapter 4, Jesus is having a conversation with the woman at the well, and he's talking to her about where it is that she's finding satisfaction. And he's talking about how he satisfies. And it says this in John chapter 4, beginning in verse 13. It says, Jesus answered, "Everyone who drinks this water," and he's talking about the water from the well, it says, "will be thirsty again, but whoever drinks the water I give him will never thirst. Indeed, the water I give him will become a spring of water welling up to eternal life." And in her life, he actually points out one of her idols. He says, "Listen, go and get your husband." She says, "I don't have a husband." He says, "Yeah, I know you don't have a husband. You've been divorced 5 times, and now the guy that you're living with isn't your husband." And in the moment, it seems like he's being harsh, but the reality is that he's engaging the idol. He says, "I know where you've been looking for satisfaction. I know what it is that you think is going to make you feel you can only find it in me." Jesus wants to engage those idols with you. He wants for you to be able to leave behind the things that are leaving you empty, that are leaving you thirsty, and help you to find something that can actually satisfy you, to experience that in him. And one of the ways that you can see, one of the things in your life that is going to give you a picture of what those idols are, is discontentment. Pay attention to it. Is there an idol that you've created? The last one is interesting because the last one, it seems like a good thing. But discontentment has the ability to show you when it's become a bad thing. Because the third question that you ask, not only do you need to ask, okay, is there a lie that I'm believing? Is there an idol that I've created? But the third question that you need to ask is this: is there a good thing in my life that I've taken from God? Is there a good thing in my life that I've taken from God? Throughout the Old Testament, you see people who do this all the time. So God comes to Sarah and Abraham and says, "Listen, I'm going to create a nation out of you. I'm going to do this amazing thing in your life. This is good thing that God wants to do in their life, a good thing that he wants to see happen in their life." But rather than them waiting for him to make that happen, they decide they're going to make it happen for him. And so Sarah says, "Oh, listen, Abraham, I'm too old. This isn't going to happen with me, so take my maid," and maybe that's how God's going to do this. They didn't do that because God told them that. They did it because they took a good thing from God and decided that they were going to make it happen themselves. Is there a good thing in your life that you've taken from God? This happens for me all the time with Hoboken Grace. Whenever I begin to feel discontentment welling up within me as it pertains to Hoboken Grace and what's happening in people's lives and our ability to impact our community and the world around us, as soon as I begin to feel that discontentment welling up within me, I know that there's a good thing. What God's doing and how God's impacting people is a good thing. And I believe from the moment that we got to Hoboken that God wanted to see this happen inside of our city. But guess what? I'm not the one who's going to make it happen. But when I take it from him, all of a sudden, I begin to become discontent with what's happening and how it's happening and how fast it's happening. I see this happen oftentimes as it pertains to how we provide for our families. And I'll hear people say to me, you know, I think God calls me to provide for my family. Absolutely, God calls you to provide for your family. But when you take that good thing and rather than following God in it, you begin to lead God in it, all of a sudden you start to make decisions that compromise your integrity. All of a sudden you start to make decisions that not only are they not following God, but they're actually going against what God's called you to do. And we do it under the guise or under the disguise of a good thing. But it's a good thing that we've taken from God. And we're no longer following Him in it. And when you do that, there's all sorts of discontentment that begins to well up within you of how successful you are and how fast things are moving and as opposed to trusting Him and following Him and what it is that He's called you to do. I find this to be remarkable about Paul, because Paul is told by Jesus, listen, you're going to be the apostle to the Gentiles. You're going to take me to the Gentiles. Your role is going to be significant. But rather than him ever stepping out and leading God, he continues to follow Him. And rather than him deciding, okay, I'm going to go here, I'm going to go there, he's constantly waiting and saying, okay, God, where do you want me to go? How long should I stay here? When should I leave? He's constantly following. And we have a tendency throughout the Old Testament, you see it in Jacob's life. You see it in Jacob's life. Jacob, God comes to Jacob and says, listen, you're going to be the heir. You're going to be the one through which I work. But rather than Jacob waiting for God to do that, he took that good thing from God and decided that he was going to make it happen. And in the process, he lives his whole life discontent. His whole life is discontent. Is there a lie that you're believing? Is there an idol that you've created? Is there a good thing that you've taken from God? Pay attention to your discontentment. It can be a powerful tool in your life to be able to see what's happening in your heart. And I know as I say that, for some of you, you're thinking to yourself, that doesn't sound like a good thing. I don't want to know that. It would be so much easier if I just ignored it. It'd be so much easier if I just swept it under the carpet. But here's the thing that you have to understand about Paul's journey. And the thing that needs to change in the way that we interact with this, Paul at one point, he's talking about what really matters. He's talking about kind of the main focus for his entire life. It's in Philippians chapter 3, and he says this. He says, but whatever was to my profit, I now consider loss for the sake of Christ. What is more, I consider everything a loss compared to the surpassing greatness of knowing Christ Jesus my Lord, for whose sake I have lost all things. I consider them all rubbish that I may gain Christ. You see, for Paul, the most valuable thing, the most important thing, was knowing Christ and honoring Him. And I know for some of us, we look at this and say, you want me to use discontentment to see what's happening in my heart? That doesn't sound positive. I don't want to see my idols. But it's not just that we become aware of them. The goal of this is not just that we become aware of the lies. The goal of this is not just that we become aware of the idols. The goal of this is not just to become aware of the things that we've taken from God. That's not the goal. The goal is to engage those things with Christ. Christ wants to engage those things with you. He wants to free you from those lies. He wants to be able to speak truth into that with you. He wants to be able to break down those idols in your life and show you how He can satisfy you. He wants to do that with you. He wants to walk through that process of you saying, you know what, God, I've taken this from you. I need to give this back to you. He wants to walk through that with you. And sometimes one of the amazing things about grace is this. Listen. One of the amazing things about grace is this. We don't have to be afraid of our mistakes. And rather than running from them, we can embrace them and actually experience God in them, and Christ wants to work in them for us to know him better, for us to experience him more, and for us to begin to experience the transformation that happens in our lives as we draw close to him. And the truth is, all of us have lies and idols and things that we've taken from God, and we can ignore them, or we can use discontentment to expose them. But rather than living in guilt because they're exposed, we experience grace in their exposure, and so we step into them with Christ. And we're able to experience him and know him in all of it. And so rather than that discontentment coming up inside of me and me feeling like a failure, me feeling like, oh, I can't believe this is showing up again, to be able to take the time, just to take the time to pause for a second and to become self-aware, to engage God in this conversation. God's, what's happening inside me? Is there a lie here? Is there a lie here that I can engage with you? Is there an idol here that I can begin to fight with you? Is there something here that I've taken from you? But rather than being afraid of it, rather than being afraid of it or overwhelmed by it, I think that Paul interacted with these things as an opportunity. He was excited about them. And he looked at everything as a chance to know Christ more, not just the good things. Everything was a chance for him to know Christ more. And ultimately, that's what was most important. Ultimately, that's what mattered more than anything else. I believe that as God steps into your life and my life, he comes to us and says, this story of discontentment, it's not your story. It's not your story. And if you'll follow me in it, if you'll trust me, if you'll change that baseline that we talked about, if you'll begin to practice the transformation of your minds and those habits that he gives us, that you can experience a life of contentment, that we can learn what Paul learned. But in that, don't allow your struggles, don't allow those moments where discontentment, it just shows up. Don't allow those things to frustrate you, or don't allow those things to be seen even as failures on the journey. Look at them as opportunities for you to continue learning what Paul learned. And most importantly, opportunities for you to continue to grow in your understanding of who Christ is and what Christ wants to do in your life. And for you to be able to experience what is most important. For you to be able to experience what is most valuable. And that is knowing and honoring him. To be able to use even the moments when you fail as opportunities for you to know and honor him more. I challenge you this week. My challenge to you is that this week that you would take 1 hour of your week. And I know it's Christmas season. I know every 5 minutes of your life is planned from now until January 1st. I understand that. But this is what Christmas is all about. It's about knowing and honoring him. I challenge you to take 1 hour of your week, this week, and just sit down and look at the discontentment in your life. Don't run from it. Don't be frustrated or defeated by it. Just look at the discontentment in your life and to ask yourself these three questions with Christ, not by yourself, with Christ, to ask him, okay, is there a lie that I'm believing here? Allow him to speak truth into it. Is there an idol that I've created here? Is there something that I've taken from you that I need to give back to you? And allow him to begin to work through that with you. Allow him to begin to take all that we've been talking through and to do what only he can do, which is to change our hearts. Change our hearts. That we might not live a story of discontentment. That we might live the story that Paul lived. That we might one day say, I've learned. I've learned to be content in all things. Will you pray with me? Father, as we walk through this, I just ask that in all of it, that what drives us, what motivates us, is what matters most, which is knowing you and honoring you, following you with our lives. Father, I pray that we would use those consistent disciplines that you've taught us. I pray that we would use those to constantly remind us of what's true. I pray that not only we would use those to remind us of this truth, but that then also we would use those moments when discontentment begins to show up, that we would use those moments as moments to be able to understand what's happening in our hearts, moments that would drive us to you, to engage you in this conversation of the lies that we're believing, the idols that we're worshiping. And Father, and I pray that in all of it, that all of it, would allow us to be able to know you more. To experience your love and grace more. And as a result, for us to begin to live more and more to accomplish one thing, which is to honor you and all that we have. To honor and love you. In Jesus' name, amen.